What is the news, anyway? For years, we took for granted. It was the information that was in the paper, was on the radio, was on the television. It was objective reporting about facts that affected our lives. Sometimes there were opinions. Sometimes there were debates. But these days, what is the news? It's a mélange of outrage and polarization and accusations. It's fake. It's in peril. It's disappearing.
And it's still one of the most fascinating careers I think anyone can go into. You know, I was realizing recently it's been about 30 years since I got my master's from the Cronkite School at Arizona State University. I've been getting a lot of emails from recent graduates that are, you know, looking for their first career. And I tell the story about how I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up and I stumbled into public relations. And at the time, the journalism program was in the basement of a old building on the main campus, and that students today have this incredibly innovative and beautiful building on the ASU campus downtown and may not realize exactly what they have the opportunity to experience by being there. My first classes were on manual typewriters, which makes me sound really old. Maybe I am. But I've been so excited to, you know, to watch the transformation that's happening at the Cronkite School and the innovative ways that the program is addressing journalism and communication, how it is really hitting head on with, you know, what is happening in our society around this and recognizing that this, in my view, you know, is such a important part of our society and our democracy is a free and independent news. And maybe it's shrinking, maybe it's evolving, but we are still going to have it. I've said this forever. We will always have newspapers, as long as people are born and people die and people get married, we will have a record of these types of things in our community. And so I was thrilled when we extended the invitation to some representatives from the Cronkite School to talk about the newly launched Knight Center for the Future of News at Arizona State University. And I am going to ask our guests to introduce themselves, and we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about this really exciting initiative that's happening at my alma mater.
Hi, I'm Batento Batts. I'm the Dean of the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communication here at Arizona State University. I have just started my fifth year in this seat, and it has really truly been a joy and a pleasure to play this role here at this particular time. My background is really in three things. Journalism, has been a lot of time as in newspapers and in media, and then in education and in philanthropy. And so what I say, this is sort of my return to my second career. My second career was in higher education. And so come back into this role and been here again. This is my fifth year at Arizona State. And so really, truly am excited about this opportunity that we have here with the Knight Center for the Future of News, and also enthusiastically embrace the responsibility that comes along with these resources that we've been given and the opportunity to make a difference at this particular time. And one of the other key things that I really enjoy is the opportunity to work along with Julia Wallace, who's my colleague here. And so I think she should introduce herself.
I'm Julia Wallace. I'm the launch director of the Knight Center. I'm also the Frank Russell Chair in the Business of Journalism. And I spent a long time as a newspaper editor, various places around the country, including a short stint as managing editor of The Republic back in 99 and 2000. And I'm excited to be with all of you.
Well, I'm so glad that you're here. And again, I'm just thrilled to watch what is happening to and opportunities that the Cronkite School is bringing, not only to, you know, the students and those that are pursuing careers, but really the impact it's having in our community and the larger community when we can take a look at such important discussions around, you know, what journalism is, where we're at, the things that are impacting it. So maybe to start the conversation, if you could, is really what is the center and what is your ultimate goal for the work that it's going to be doing? And, you know, talk us through sort of how this is going to come to be, because you're still in the launching phase of this program. So share a little bit about where it's at and what we can expect to see over the next handful of months as you move through this process.
Sure. So the Knight Center for the Future of News, you know, the end goal here is to help to chart a path for a sustainable future for the news industry, and that we want to do this by really using current world conditions as a guiding path and having an eye towards where the future is going. And so that requires two things of us. Number one is that we have to be accepting of where we are and embrace where we are and be very enthusiastic where perhaps maybe others are pessimistic. We are very, very optimistic about where we are as an industry right now, and that we see a pathway for the future that perhaps looks very different than what the past was, but is still very exciting and still very relevant and still very important. And then we also have to not only embrace the now, but try to see around several corners in terms of where this is all going and where technology will not only disrupt, but where it will take us into the future, and how we embrace technology, how we leverage it and utilize it to be not only sustainable, but to really be relevant and connecting with audiences. And so that again is also exciting. And so the Knight Center, as you've seen, has three labs, one that focuses on the role of journalism in our democracy, the other that focuses on, you know, innovations and technology, and the third is about business sustainability and how those three come together. But fundamental and the underpinning for all of this is audience engagement, that we want to understand audiences and their relationship to news, what brings them to news in all its different, you know, shapes, forms, and sizes, and outlets, and who's doing it, what brings them to news, and how they, you know, engage with it, how, where we are with trust, and where we can build from there. We accomplish nothing if we don't engage and involve audiences in this process. And so that's sort of high level of what we're endeavoring to do here. Julia, did I miss anything?
No, I think that's great. I if I was going to add anything, I would sort of tell a historical story. In 1999, I was at the American Society of Newspaper Editors Conference, and Andy Grove, who was then the head of Intel, gave a speech in which he said, you know, that was back 99, for those who remember, just when broadband was beginning, the internet's just beginning. Craigslist had started only in California at this point, really early, right? And he gives a speech and says, you're at an inflection point. You're at an inflection point on revenue. You're at an inflection point on audience. And you need to invest heavily in research, because if you don't do it now, you're not going to have the money to do it later. Well, so everybody walked out and was like, oh, yeah, whatever. And 99 was the highest year in revenue for newspapers, and no decisions were made. And, you know, in fact, I think pretty much throughout the industry, you know, whether it's newspapers, TV, there has not been the investment in research that there needs to be. And so I think one of the big values that we bring to it is we are one of the best, or probably, well, we are definitely the most innovative university in the country, in the world, and do so much with research. So bringing sort of research and real world experience together to create solutions is going to be critical.
Well, I think no one could have really, well, their futurists might have been able to take a look at that time frame and said to us, you know, there's going to be these things that are going to disrupt what you do. You know, I went to a presentation around that same time, just a couple of years later, and up on a big screen, they were showing us this thing called Twitter. And it was, you know, he would take a picture and then it would show up on the screen, and he would tell us that people all over the world could see that picture. And if we wanted to watch a television program only about golf, there was going to be a channel that focused only on golf. And we thought this guy was crazy. Well, fast forward, and here's where we are, right? So the idea that we probably didn't think about it because we were the only thing out there. You know, there was the main newspaper in a community, and you had small local independent newspapers, which, you know, you supported because they had the you know, the lunch schedule for your elementary school and the highlight of the sports for the, you know, at high school. And that's what you had. And you had your three or four television stations. You know, our namesake here, Walter Cronkite, was on the air. You trusted him and his colleagues and such. And that was it. That was all that news was. We had, it wasn't a discussion. It was, you flipped the television on at 6 o'clock. There was the news. You went to bed after you watched the 10 o'clock news. End of discussion. So the idea that it was a business, you know, which certainly there was revenue sources and things, but I mean, it doesn't surprise me that we as an industry probably didn't look at it the way it needed to have been looked at, if you can project backwards and say, this is where we are today. So when you think about this type of a center that exists then within the confines of a university that is, as you said, Julia, very well known and respected from its research perspective, how did ASU and you all in initially attract the Knight Foundation to even look at ASU and say, this is the place to invest a significant amount of, you know, financial support, and this is what we want to do, this very forward-thinking, bold idea, and, you know, help us with a nice contribution so we can make this happen? How did ASU even get in the running for a conversation like that?
So I would love to tell you that we just met up for dinner and huddled and said, here's an idea. And it was like, ta-da, okay, the check's in the mail. No, it's not that simple. This was a multi-year process. It was arduous. There was a lot of back and forth. There was a lot of streamlining and fine-tuning in terms of the, you know, the concepts and the ideas around this. But we operated from a really fundamental premise. And number one, we've been fortunate to have a relationship with the Knight Foundation going back some 30 years now. And so Knight has been a supporter of ASU and the Cronkite School for a number of years. And so we operated from a pretty good position starting out in that we had a relationship. We've had a measure of success, and, you know, they've supported the Knight chair here at Cronkite. They've had, you know, support for our News 21 program here at Cronkite. They've supported some work that we've done in the innovation space. And so again, we weren't starting from scratch in terms of our relationship with Knight. And, you know, we were invited to think big about what a next level project would be. And so operating with, again, with that level of respect and appreciation for what we could do, but then also we have what I frequently say is the very best laboratory to practice journalism, media, and communications, and that being not just our school, but here in the greater Phoenix area and in Arizona. And because of, you think of all the, some of the key issues that our society is facing, we see many of them here in Arizona. And so that's one of the calling cards that we have here with this city that's growing still at a rapid clip, and all of the diversity of issues and concepts and, again, people that are here, that's an advantage. And so Knight was looking at a place to do something at a place where it hadn't done something before. And, you know, ASU was then, you know, again, highly regarded. And so we sort of, if this was to use a football analogy, we were sort of already at the 20-yard line because of that relationship. So then it was a matter of having something that made sense, that really would fill a space that wasn't currently being filled. And where it made sense was like looking at the impact of technology and then, of course, sustainability and where the path forward for the industry was going to be. And so that's really where our proposal, you know, resonated with the team at Knight.
So, Julia, you are the launch director, in addition to many other responsibilities I'm assuming that you have there. What's happening now in terms of getting the center ready to launch? And, you know, what does a time frame look like? When would we start to see or have opportunities to participate in what will be happening there?
You know, it's a process to hire and bring in staff on. And so we wanted to get going right away. We have a report coming out next month by Professor Len Downey, the former editor of The Washington Post, that looks at the current landscape for local news, the successes and challenges, I'd say. So we're not, you know, we're getting going. So that'll come out in August. We also have a project working where we are analyzing all of the work done in AI in journalism in the past 3 years. You know, obviously AI is a bigger and bigger part of what we need to be doing, both offensively and defensively. And so before we decide where to jump in, we're like, we need to understand better the current universe. And so we're working on a project to sort of understand what has actually been done in the past 3 years and one of the opportunities. So we have a couple projects going. There are a few more we're talking about. We're looking at something on sort of what videos make people respond to our messages about why our work's important and which ones don't. So you get the idea. So we're trying to get stuff going with Cronkite faculty and others. We will be hiring an executive director probably late this year, I guess, before they're actually here. And then once they're here, they'll sort of fill out the staff and we'll go from there.
What does it mean? You mentioned, Dean, that there's, you know, core initiatives that fall into three different labs. So what does the structure of that look like? Is this a lot of research, obviously? What role, if any, will the students be participating and playing in? You know, what happens when we show up at the building and say, I want to see the Knight Center? Like, what's it going to be when we get there? This is not labs with little petri dishes, right? This is brain thinking and lots of stuff going on in the ether there. So what are we going to see when we get there?
So if you've ever visited a teaching hospital and where you've had an opportunity to see, you know, doctors and medical professionals interacting with students who are learning at the same time, this is the analogy. That's what we truly are. I mean, it is, you know, learning by doing hands-on. And so you'll see, you know, our students, our graduate students, our undergraduate students getting to interact with the professionals in each of these labs. And the students really are the differentiator that we have. You know, they're coming to us fresh with their ideas and their perspectives on not only where media used to be, but where it is going. And that gives us some insights that we want to and will tap to lead us into the future with the Knight Center. So you'll see, you know, these professionals working alongside the students, getting their ideas and testing and trying things in our environment. So not to get too geeky with you, but essentially the model that we're operating on here is that we're going to, again, research, test, apply, share, and train. So we're going to use that audience-based research to really inform what are we looking to develop here? Let's use AI as an example. Okay, how are people interacting with AI? So how might that influence if we wanted to do an AI bot reading the news, for example? And then how we test that on our platforms here at the Cronkite School or platforms within the Knight Center, and testing that and then applying that, looking at how the audience engages with that particular concept, and then what we learn from that in a live environment, and then how we can share that with others, because that's a big part of what we're doing through the information hub part of the Knight Center, is that we're not looking to do this and just hoard, you know, what we learn. We want to share this with everybody writ large. And then we're hoping to hear from other places who might be doing something similar. Hey, we tried something similar with that. Here's what we learned. And then we can apply that. You know, so for just to give an example, we are, you know, in conversations with another university. I'll share with you, Northwestern, Medill, their school. It's done a lot of work, similar work in this space. And we're looking to work together with the folks at Medill. We're looking to work together with folks at other universities or other journalism organizations, and how we can, again, share what's learned, try things, fail quickly, move on, get to successes, share what we get from those successes, and really build that momentum.
I have a sort of real politic question here. I appreciate so much the positivity and the desire to focus on what's right and to get ahead of the trend and so on. And at the same time, it seems to me like we're on this moving sidewalk with the earth swallowing us up right behind us. And we need to stay ahead because mutually assured destruction at some level seems to be percolating out there in this industry. When you talk about a sustainable future, right? And I think that is exactly the right frame. Clearly, to make this sustainable, it has to focus on the business model, the revenue model for news and other forms of reporting and objective information sharing. It's got to deal with technology. There's this much larger problem, which you've pointed out, which is the nature of audiences, the way they discover content, as it's now called, the distribution channels through which they consume it. All of that has changed and continues to change very, very dramatically, even to the point, maybe, where this concept of a journalist and an audience may be less relevant. We might need different ways to think about the fundamental relationship there. Underneath all this, it seems to me there's two very real concerns, which is students, undergraduates, as well as people seeking a postgraduate degree, are seeking careers. And the industry at large is not run by the academics, the researchers, or even the smartest thinkers out there. There are owners, publishers, editors who control so much of what's actually happening at the places students want to work or thought they wanted to work until they discover maybe some of the realities there. All of which is to say, so this is one of these macro questions that becomes impossible to answer. How do you responsibly deal with all of that? How do you, you know, yes, the research drives insight, shares best practices, et cetera, and you're sending folks out into a world that is not driven by the best ideas. How do you handle that?
So let me take that.
Go.
I teach an entrepreneurship class, and here's one of the things I say to my students. As journalists, we are our own worst enemies, because as journalists, we are trained to look at the problems. And if you think of entrepreneurs, they don't see problems, they see opportunities. And so many of the great brands, so many of the great businesses have grown out of disruption, have grown out of moments of uncertainty. I mean, you know, I think part of it is for a certain generation of us, we sort of grew up in a world in which we were dealing with, you know, this sort of la, 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 mature organization. And, you know, there were all these barriers to entry that sort of kept that in place, et cetera. And that's gone, you know, but great, because we need to be entrepreneurial. And I think if you, you know, if you look at some of the success stories out there, and they're going to continue to be more, it's people who walk in and like, okay, that's what was. I don't care what was. I care about what's going to be and how do I contribute in this space, you know, to the larger goals. So I think part of the challenge is getting a very different mindset of how we approach it. That'd be my pitch.
Very much. And I think you're right. You know, disruption has been a part of this industry ever since I started in it and graduated from college 35 years ago. Then it was the decline of afternoon newspapers. So there's been disruption ever since I got into this. But I think now, you know, we are at a phase where it's not about, well, the woe is me, you know, people aren't getting the newspaper anymore, but it's more about people see the possibilities, and the possibilities are provided because the barriers to entry now are so much lower. I mean, if we decided today that the three of us were going to launch a news business, we could do it. I mean, back when I was graduating from college, if I wanted to start a newspaper, I needed a few million dollars to do it, which I didn't have and still don't have. But there you go. I mean, so there the possibilities are endless now, and you can go from idea to concept much quicker. And I think that sort of fuels the optimism.
Well, and you know, when I the word disruption, when it was in the context of what we would say before, I think is very different than what we mean now when we say, you know, we're disrupting the way of doing it. And one of the things that struck me in Julia and what you were saying is this entrepreneurial mindset, and that this type of conversation opens up the idea that you can be in this business and be a journalist or reporter or any element that can connects to the news business, still being a great writer, still liking research, still liking to look at things and find things, but you're coming, you know, come to it with a very different perspective. And there's room in this discussion for all of that way of thinking, which is what this lab environment, you know, thrives on, right? Is the different viewpoints, the different life experiences, the different ways that we come to, you know, this industry and this business, which again, you know, when I was studying journalism and made the decision to go into the public relations side of things, we didn't talk about it as a business. It just wasn't. It is now, and the news business certainly is, and we're watching it and discussions around the financial components of the newsroom and what's happening and lawsuits and other various things that are, you know, impacting what is considered news. And an opportunity like this and what the potential for something like this is, obviously is incredibly powerful for ASU and the Cronkite School, but the information that's going to come out of here is going to, you know, be impacting certainly in the immediate, but I think we will see it for generations to come as we, if disrupt is what we're doing, we're disrupting the way of thinking about it again. And only maybe this time we're doing it by asking different questions of different people and wanting to know what you think about this product that we're putting out there into the world. Is it relevant? Is it valuable? How do we value it? Do we still need it? If we don't need it, what do we need instead? And we can have those discussions inside of a lab like this, where we're forcing people to think differently, and it's encouraged to be thinking differently about this. And really, to me, is another example of what, you know, leadership role ASU is taking, and certainly how it blends in with the other programs and you know, circumstances that are happening in the Cronkite School here at the downtown campus and in your campuses around the country that are really, you know, causing all of us to think differently and re-engaging and reigniting, I think, the power of what journalism really needs to be in our society.
Yeah, if I may, I will say that anyone who says that the journalism is dead is just dead wrong. The need for and the desire for news and information continues and remains very strong. But I think that what we did and what we allowed ourselves to do is to become what I would call generalists in this practice. And that the idea that one news organization could represent successfully all of the voices of a community was really wrong-minded. And that really where we've gone now is from the few to the many, which is good, and from the generalist point of view to more specialization and really understanding audiences and communities and perspectives narrow and deep and very, very well, rather than just, you know, sort of, you know, broad and shallow. And so that's what's emerged. And I think that that's a good thing, is that, you know, there's no one organization that has a grasp on all of the audience. And if we're honest with ourselves, it never did. We fooled ourselves into thinking that, but if we're honest about it, it never really did.
And that's hopefully what's going to happen, is we're gonna take a look inside and a look outside and pay attention to what our responsibilities are and what we've agreed to be a part of as we've taken on this career, and the future of what, you know, journalism and news and what is content, what are stories and what is information sharing gets redefined as a result of, you know, the good work that is anticipated coming out of the Knight Center. I, for one, am thrilled to see and excited to see what's going to be happening there.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Copper State of Mind. If you enjoyed the conversation, please share it with a colleague who might also find this podcast valuable. It's easy to do. Just click the share button in the app you're listening to now to pass it along. You can also follow Copper State of Mind in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other podcast app. We publish new episodes every other Friday. Copper State of Mind is brought to you by HMA Public Relations, the oldest continuously operating PR firm in Arizona. The show is recorded and produced by the team at Speed of Story, a B2B communications firm in Phoenix, and distributed by PHX.fm, the leading independent B2B podcast network in Arizona. For all of us here at Speed of Story and PHX.fm, I'm Adrian McIntyre. Thanks for listening and for sharing the show with others if you choose to do so. We hope you'll join us again for another episode of Copper State of Mind.